Now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. We left off here yesterday, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 11, and I would like to use verse 11 as a springboard and kind of go back and review briefly with you as we go on, keeping in mind this illustration that he introduced earlier, back in chapter 10, the idea of a foot race, the idea of boxing and wrestling, the idea of striving for the mastery, being focused on the goal of winning the prize. He said, all run in the race, but only one wins. Only one gains the victor's crown. Now, they're doing it, all this training and all the exercise and the diet and everything they're doing, the discipline that they exercise in training, in the course of pursuing that gold medal or the silver or the bronze or that particular trophy, whatever it is, and those things are temporary. In the pursuit of it, though, he uses their example, these athletes, as they train, as they discipline themselves and bring everything in their lives into line with the pursuit of their goal. It is the people with the most determination who come out ahead. Now, you'll note here, as he moved into chapter, the conclusion of chapter 9 and into chapter 10, there is this matter here that he moves it from a physical illustration. He uses a physical illustration to illustrate a spiritual truth. And then he uses Israel, the history, the exodus of the Jews out of Egypt into the Promised Land. And he uses these things and he brings them up as examples. Now, why? The reason these people were broken off, the reason that people don't win, is because they break training, because they break discipline, because they no longer keep themselves in subjection to that goal. Now, what goal is it that Christians are supposed to be following? What is the regimen? How do you know if you're doing it right, quote unquote? Well, the Bible gives you the spec sheet, as it were, tells you what you're supposed to be. The Lord tells us, or refers us there in Romans chapter 8. He says, whom he foreknew, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son. It's God's will that you and I be like Jesus Christ. As a Christian, the pattern for us, the specifications for what makes a good Christian, a mature Christian, can be found in what the Bible says about Jesus Christ, God's only begotten Son. Now, you will notice that he was in all points, the writer of Hebrews tells us, in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. God puts a premium on the life that is pure. Today, everybody's got this really lax, loose attitude. Hey, you know, we're not going to be judgmental. If you want to, that's fine. You're not hurting anybody else. Go to it. Go for it. And it doesn't make any difference where they're going. I mean, it's just do your own thing. Whether it's drugs, whether it's thrills, whether it's sex, doesn't make any difference. Well, you know, God's not some old nasty judge and fuddy-duddy. Now, those who hold to God at all have made him to be some sort of with-it hipster, or else he's a senile, old doddering fool plinking on a harp somewhere up in the clouds, unaware and uncaring of what's going on down here. My friend, neither one of those, none of that, is what the Bible sets forth. Now, if you and I are supposed to avoid sin, note, please, what he says then in verse 12. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. Closer to the time that Paul was writing, you remember during Christ's ministry, the Jews, the leadership, the Pharisees, the scribes, the the big shots, the council, were enamored with the fact that they were God's chosen people. When Israel went into captivity, if you go clear back in the Old Testament, when Babylon took Jerusalem, the Jews said, no, it's not going to happen. God won't let it happen. We're his people. Now, they've been disobedient. They've been fooling around with idolatry, the immorality, the corruption in politics and everything else. God said he would judge this. They said, oh, no, he won't let anything bad happen here because we have the temple here. It's not too far removed from that kind of talk and thinking that I find some people, you know, who look at the world situation and say, well, it's bad, but, you know, it's not going to come here. And it was a great shock to them. 9/11, when terror struck in the United States, people were shocked. And I could not believe the response of people. There were folks running around saying, oh my goodness, is this the end of the world? Two buildings got knocked down. Thousands of people were killed. But in the scale of things, hardly, hardly the end of the world. And yet, because people had the idea, but we're Americans, we're a Christian nation. Really? Then why do so many of the writers talk about America in the post-Christian era? Why is it that the American Civil Liberties Union can have such clout, illegal clout, as to be able to push things through almost as though it were law? I mean, the removal of the Ten Commandments from the courtroom down in Alabama. How foolish. Oh, no, that's separation of church and state. I defy you, Christian brother. I defy anyone listening to me. You go to the Constitution. You show me the first sentence. Show me the first fragment of a sentence that says anything about the separation of church and state. And you will not find it. It is true. Congress shall make no law concerning religion. Yeah, there'll not be an established church, a state religion, and that was the intent, and you'll find that in all of their writing outside the Constitution. But these guys that are running around flapping their gums about separation of church and state are doing so and making points off the ignorance of the American people. My friend Thomas Jefferson may not have been a great Christian man. He had been elected as the president of the American Bible Society. He had problems with the Bible. There were things he didn't agree with. He took a pair of scissors and snipped out everything he didn't believe. I don't hold him up as being some great example for what a Christian ought to be. But I don't want to see him get the bum rap as being the father of separation of church and state. Do you realize the only time Jefferson said anything about that that you can find in the record is in a letter to a private individual, a private citizen? It was private correspondence in which he used the expression separation of church and state. And if you read that letter, if you get into it, you get the idea that the government is not supposed to interfere with the church, and the church is not supposed to interfere with the running of the government. But nowhere do you get this freedom from religion that is being pushed today under the guise of separation of church and state. All right, well, enough ranting and raving. Let's come back to the scripture. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. Because there are Americans who feel like, oh, this is a Christian nation. God won't let anything bad happen here. Well, I think we've seen the end of that myth. My friend, anywhere sin becomes as rampant as it has in the United States, it will surely be followed by God's judgment. And so it will here. Whether it be in terms of earthquakes in divers places, whether it be in terms of shortages, flooding, drought, whether it be plague, disease. Oh, my goodness. Can anybody be so naive as to think that God, who in the past was so hard on sin, suddenly just forgot about it And it said, oh, well, no big deal. Because American Christians have gotten such a loose attitude towards sin, they not only tolerate sin in their own lives, but they have begun to embrace it. And unfortunately, there are those who are supposed to be church leaders. There are churches that operate on the basis of this permissiveness, the worldliness that the old-timers used to talk about. Interesting. Old-time holiness people used to really shell corn on this. They used to split rails. They used to get down on it. Worldliness in the church. But my friend, you never hear people today talking about godliness. You never hear them talking about holiness today. No, it's terms that have been substituted, terms like relevance, cooperation, things that, instead of taking a stand against sin, condone it and encourage it. As that has become a national blight on Christianity, the individual has got to take care. Because if you ever get to the point where you think, oh, I'm too strong, I would never give in to that temptation, that's usually the one that will bite you. No, this kind of thing never bothers me, and I don't see why people make such a big deal about it. I can take it or leave it. It won't bother me. And it usually take you down by the throat. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed. Take heed to what? These examples that he's been giving. If God would wipe out so many of his chosen people, I mean, the Bible calls them that. He chose them from before they were a people. It's interesting. You will note the things that he talks about here in chapter 10 in the first four verses, how they were all baptized in Moses. They all did eat of the same spiritual meat. They all drank of the same spiritual drink. God was taking a diverse group of tribes and welding them into a nation, welding them into a people. Take heed to the example that he has seen to it that was recorded. Take heed to the examples that he has left us. Take heed lest ye fall. There hath no temptation taken you. And my friend, you will find this a tremendous blessing. It also has a tendency to straighten you out in your thinking, comb some kinks out of your head. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer, who will not allow you to be tempted above, or that is beyond, that you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape, that ye may be able to bear it. There are times when people say, oh, I'll tell you what, so-and-so fell. You know, the devil had to take him out because God was using him so much. Listen, the child of God can never be taken out by the devil. Understand that. He doesn't ever have to sin because the devil won't let him keep from it. No temptation you ever faced is anything other than the same kind of temptation everybody else has faced. My time is rapidly getting away. But you see, Jesus was tempted in all points like as we are, yet without sin. The lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life. Everybody faces that kind of thing. But you'll note here what he says. Now, I don't have time to go into it any further. I hope you'll join me tomorrow as we continue our discussion here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10.